this case involves a 3-year-old child arriving in the resuscitation department with a diagnosis of a tibial fibular subamputation due to a truck crashing. The patient is taken to the operating room. Surgery lasts 7.5 hours, and then the child is taken back to the resuscitation department. Of course, the absolute lack of mobilization is essential, so the child is intubated, ventilated, and sedated for 15 days. In this period, dressings are changed twice a day, and leeches are applied in order to favor venous discharge. Before weaning, an indwelling catheter is positioned at the level of the sciatic nerve, and ropivacaine and clonidine are administered. The ketamine intravenous infusion, together with midazolam, is discontinued. The catheter was necessary in order to provide an analgesic nerve block and a sympathetic block with the vasodilation of the sciatic region. This is important to favor the engraftment of cutaneous flaps. Then the patient is extubated and kept in the resuscitation department in a protected environment. The adequate posture of the limb is, of course, taken care of with an effective pain management. The assessment of the effectiveness of the analgesic block was based on the PICU sedation scale, and then facial expression, posture, heart rate, and arterial pressure were monitored too. It was not possible to explain the medical treatment to such a small child, so the nurse had to find a communication channel which was appropriate for the age of the child. The work carried out with parents was crucial, and it made a huge contribution to the management of this case. It was possible to establish a good relationship with parents to reduce their anxiety that therefore was not expressed with their child. During the resuscitation department stay, we also performed some sessions in the hyperbaric chamber, and the patient was not cooperative. It was not possible to expect this of a child. After 3 weeks, the child was transferred to the orthopedic ward. The peripheral block was maintained. We daily assessed the effectiveness of this method together with an anesthesiologist. At the end of the therapeutic program, the catheter was removed and the patient was discharged. There was no problem in mobilizing the patient's limb. The patient will had to undergo a second surgery, which actually took place 2 days ago, and this in order to perform some debridement because there was a problem of scarring. Pain management was performed in a very positive way, thanks to the integration of the healthcare professionals. Now, let's talk about the healthcare pathway. Pain management was at the core of our approach. The stay was quite long, so we decided to analyze some activities. First of all, the patient's admission, then treatment during the stay, pain assessment, then the relationship established both with the child and the parents. Daniele reached the resuscitation department of our hospital, the Regina Margherita Hospital, in critical conditions. due to the subamputation, there had been a huge blood loss. The patient was in a state of shock due to pain. Our priorities were therefore hemodynamic stabilization and then pain management. Considering that this case was an emergency and considering that the patient was a child, we placed a peripheral intravenous line and therefore we immediately started the administration of analgesics. Then the patient was monitored, I mean vital signs were monitored, an ECG was performed, the respiratory rate and the blood pressure were monitored. Then the patient was intubated with a nasotracheal tube and the patient started being ventilated with controlled mechanical ventilation, and remifentanil and midazolam were continuously infused. This way it was possible to avoid a drug-induced respiratory depression. And then the patient had to be perfectly still. A multi-specialist team, including vascular, plastic and orthopedic surgeons, was established. Then the child was cannulated with a central venous catheter. His blood pressure was continuously monitored. This was important because during surgery this would allow us to infuse catecholamines, fluids, blood and blood products in order to keep the hemodynamic situation stable. Then, coming back from the operating room, the patient with a central venous catheter would be in a safer situation because it would be possible for us to infuse sedating agents, analgesics, and then we would have a venous access in order to perform blood tests without causing pain. Sometimes there are problems of bacterial contamination with this kind of catheter, but venipuncture is generally very painful for children. The Emla cream is applied, but we all know that children are afraid of needles. So having a CBC may be very beneficial and advantageous, but of course asepsis is fundamental. This is the diagram that was illustrated yesterday by Mr. Drigo. This is the care complexity model. We know that our patient is highly critical, his understanding is limited due to sedation and its autonomy or is limited due to his critical conditions. Doctors and nurses cooperate in such cases. The nursing staff must have an appropriate clinical experience, then must have an appropriate decision-making competence in order to identify priorities in care. Then nurses should be able to work in a team because cooperation and partnership are fundamental at this stage, and then nurses must have the appropriate scientific knowledge. It is also important to say that support personnel may play a role, a limited role, they generally work on the basis of a checklist. Nurses, of course, do have the decision-making competence in this case. Once the child is stabilized, it is important to take care of his parents. And this stage is very critical. As Daniele's parents were, of course, shocked and frightened. They were the ones who rescued the child. So the first contact with parents is generally carried out by doctor, but then nurses play a major role because they explain the situation to the patient in simpler terms. We also asked some direct questions in order to collect the patient's history, and this in order to better understand the child's needs.
Quindi
so let's go back to the diagram. As you can see, we're now taking into account the parents, not the child. And, well, obviously their health status is quite good, but their mental health status is limited. They don't really understand, and they are impaired in their decision-making capability, and their autonomy is also limited. So good physical health, impaired mental health. So during this first stage, obviously it's up to us as professionals to be able to relate ourselves to users, but users in these cases are parents, and parents are psychologically confused in cases like this. So, what is the kind of competency which is required of us? Well, it is quite clear that nurses are the most appropriate to deal with these people, with the parents, because they do have the theoretical and scientific knowledge required to explain the situation. So, after 8 hours of surgery, the child was brought back to the resuscitation unit in the first op. And, well, there were orthopedic constraints, and the age of the child, it was quite difficult to control pain and ensure that the child would be entirely immobile. So we decided to move the child to intensive care in order to ensure optimal analgesia. Medication twice a day, leeches were also applied because there was a problem of venous discharge. Dressings were changed twice a day, and the child was intubated, ventilated, and sedated for about 15 days. So, continuous infusion of remifentanil and midazolam. Sedation was quite good, but, well, obviously we had to assess it how, well, with the PICU sedation scale. So these are the parameters: agitation, facial expression, movement posture, ventilation, spontaneous or mechanical, and then cardiovascular hypertension, blood pressure, or heart rate. So as you can see, by analyzing these various parameters, we can realize whether the patient is under-sedated or ideally sedated. So between two and seven, you are ideally sedated. If the overall value is less than two, you're over-sedated, and if the value is more than seven, you're under-sedated. Now, this scale was quite important when we dressed the wounds. This is Daniele's leg. This is the application of the leech, and necrotic tissue had to be removed every time we dressed the wounds. So, let's go back to the reference diagram. As regards the child, now, the health status is mildly critical because the child is already hemodynamically stable. As regards the understanding, decision making, and autonomous action or autonomy axis, this is nil because of sedation. As regards parents, well, obviously, they cannot choose anything as regards the treatment project, but they have a very high level of understanding, which will enable us to develop a trust-based relationship. Now, who are the professionals who have to play a role here? Well, nurses in particular, and support staff to a limited extent. Nursing competency is quite important here, to check the clinical status of the patient, to assess pain and read the pain scale, and also to be able to identify very quickly any possible variation. And it is quite clear that this is something which nurses only can do. So, there will be a high decision-making capability in the treatment plan and a high discretionary nature in decisions made by nurses. And nurses will obviously be in charge of identifying priorities and defining the assessment criteria for any procedure to be carried out. Now, 15 days later, clinical conditions were improved, the wound was improved, and so we started thinking about weaning from ventilation and sedation. So the point was, it was a three-year-old child, and we wanted to wean him from all this, but we didn't want him to have pain. So we opted for an indwelling catheter, a small catheter, obviously, with a sciatic nerve, with continuous administration with a syringe pump of ropivacaine and clonidine as adjuvant to prolong the analgesic effect due to local anesthetic. Then the IV infusion of ketamine and midazolam was interrupted, and the child started waking up and becoming conscious. So this is a small indwelling catheter. This is the radiological control with contrast. So you can see the female left, this tip of the catheter and head of the femur. So pain was assessed, always by making reference to the PICU sedation scale with an hourly assessment, and these were the parameters taken into account. That is to say, spontaneous ventilation, type of respiration, movements, sedation, and so on. And facial expression. All this was used to assess sedation. Now, remember that being hospitalized in intensive care can generate stress and suffering because the child will actually feel it as a sort of punishment. Parents are absent, so this is quite problematic for a child, and this shows how important the nurse's figure, the nurse's person can be. Why? Well, because nurses become, as it were, the significant person in a strange environment in order to make it acceptable to the child. So, the care provider is not just a technician in this context. Obviously, analyzing vital signs and parameters is important because we have to understand whether there is an impairment, whether there is stress. But the point is that our role here is also that of interpreting body language. And we also have to use our own body language in order to communicate, in particular to give a sense of confidence and safety to children with our voice, by touching them, and by adopting the appropriate global attitude towards these children in order to make them feel secure. And even in an intensive care setting, it is very important to assess the sleep cycle and to maintain it as regular as possible, to feed the children regularly so as to make them live more or less, to the extent to which this is possible, more or less as they would live in the family. So it's very important also to know exactly when and what the child normally eats in order to modulate our care procedures, in order to insert them in a normal cycle. And then when we had to change the dressing, it was very important to try to understand whether the child was agitated and cried because, I don't know, he was seeing the doctors whom he didn't recognize, because the child had already developed an excellent relationship with us. And every time he was surrounded by nurses, he was absolutely calm and relaxed. However, when he saw doctors, you know, a consultant coming from outside, or the plastic surgeon, came there to change dressing. These were people he didn't know. And so it was quite important to understand whether he was actually crying because he was feeling pain or simply because he was uneasy. He felt fear and anxiety in the face of these people he didn't know. So it was up to us to interpret his feelings, indeed. How? Well, what we did was, when the dressing was changed, we tried to amuse him with games. And if this worked, then, let's say, he didn't cry. This clearly showed that the analgesic block was working, and he only needed his attention to be diverted from this moment of crisis. So, actually, it's quite important to stress that the environment does have a major bearing on the feelings of patients. So it's very important to make them feel as home as possible, as I said. So, for instance, they will need their own toys, their own games, which will make them feel at home. And in this case, our relationship with parents was quite good, because we were able to understand how Daniele's mind worked. They taught us some tricks about what he liked and what he disliked. And so the relationship with parents was fundamental. And in the relationship with parents was essential, because we were able to have them there. And having the parents or the people the child loves there is very important, because if they are present, the child does not experience the disease or this hospitalization as a loss of affection. So this is Daniele. We were authorized to show his face. So this is him in his bed with his Winnie Pooh, his teddy bear. He never leaves. Now let's go back to the diagram. As you can see, for the child, the criticality of the situation is markedly reduced, because the clinical conditions are markedly improved. The ability to understand is now quite good. Here is obviously taking into account his age, while autonomy is limited. This is due to age and to clinical conditions. Now, nursing competencies were quite important to control the clinical status, to assess pain, and obviously it will be important for nurses to make decisions, to plan the care, to ensure the continuity of care, and to have a good level of relational competency, relational with children and with parents. And then it was quite important for nurses to be able to play an organizational role and to be able to deal also with the sometimes limited human and physical resources available. The importance of the relationship with the patient is fundamental. Indeed, in intensive care or in resuscitation, nurses are often seen as technicians, as people who perform procedures and maneuvers, while they're actually friends, friends of both children and parent. So they're actually a reference person, someone who is not experienced as a cold and hostile person. So it's extremely important to try and standardize certain behavioral models which should be applied by all the care providers, because obviously we're talking about teamwork. It's not just nurses who deal with children, it's teamwork. And if these behavioral models are applied appropriately, then both children and parents may live hospitalization, may experience hospitalization as a non-traumatic or as little traumatically as possible. Now, this for me is the key sentence. If nurses are able to standardize team behavioral models, then hospitalization will be less traumatic for children and parents. This sentence is the key, and I always say children and parents because I don't think we can separate children from parents. Now, in practice, for children, but also for nurses, respectively, from different viewpoints, parents are the only reference point responsible. So we always have to take into account children and parents. We can never talk about children or parents alone. So it's fundamental for children to communicate with them with body language. And it's important for parents not to express their anxieties and fear, and to try to be as natural as possible with their children. When you have to deal with older children, they may show regressive attitudes. For instance, they may have a crying fit, they may return to thumb-sucking, they may have aneurysms, and so on. But it's important to explain to parents that these situations are quite normal. They're a reaction to stress, and they must be accepted, not punished, nor berated. So it's very important for nurses to show themselves as friends of the child, to create a relationship based on trust and availability, also through dialogue and playing. So, if children see the nurse as a positive figure, then the level of cooperation is greater, anxiety and fear will be reduced, and it will be easier for children to express pain and uneasiness, and so for us it will be easier to try and solve these situations. So it's very important to avoid anxiety and fear, because anxiety and fear will actually increase stress and tension, and so the perception of pain will actually be enhanced. So it's very important for us to be able to inform children with appropriate language in respect of their age about the diagnostic and treatment maneuvers we're going to perform, because this will allow us to make the child understand what we're doing, and so to reduce the child's fear. Obviously, children are sometimes unable to rationalize a disease and so to understand pain. As regards smaller children, they use body language to communicate, and they're sensitive to our body language too. So, in the case of Daniele, indeed we were able to create a relationship whereby we were not experienced by Daniele as unknown people. Daniele saw nurses as people who sometimes perform maneuvers which he didn't like, but everything was acted out as a game in a playful way. For instance, he had to get subcutaneous heparin every day, and we transformed this into a game, and we told him, it's a mosquito which is biting you, but then we'll get rid of the mosquito. And actually one day when I was there and I told him, it's a mosquito, I'm sorry, the mosquito is biting you, and he accepted it, but he told me, okay, why don't you kill the mosquito? So, it was really experienced as a game by Daniele. And as regards the complexity of care, now we're in a good physical health status, a good level of understanding in respect of age, and this depends on the ability of nurses to use the appropriate language, while autonomy is reduced, obviously, by the age and the type of disease. Again, let's move on to the nurses' side. A high level of autonomy is required because the child is young. The nurse must be able to relate appropriately with the child, especially in a playful way, if necessary. But parents are a key factor because nurses have to watch the child to understand his mood and so on, but the parents are those who have been spending most of the time with the child before the accident, and so they can give us the key to understand the behavior, the reaction, and the desires of the child. So parents' cooperation was extremely good in this case, and so we were really able to understand the child's requirements. So his hospital room was no longer a recitation room. It was his own little room with, you know, his drawings hanging from the wall, the TV with cartoons. You know, his mother had brought along his favorite cartoon videos, and we had to watch them too for 1 month. And there were his games, and we were also able to follow his feeding pattern and to respect his feeding habits. Obviously, the child's position was constrained by the treatment, but we were able to make him sleep as close as possible to the way he used to sleep at home with his transitional objects, too. So we have really used all the options we had at our disposal to reduce the traumatic nature of an event of this kind. So, meeting the child's requirement, this is always essential. Now, what about the parents? I'm about to conclude, but I'd like to assess this aspect with you, because it is extremely important. And it's been extremely important, especially for the treatment of this case. Now, as regards the parents, it is quite clear that trauma tends to destabilize parents psychologically, and they often feel guilt, they feel they're not up to events, they feel they're frustrated, and so there is a whole set of psychological problems which are created in parents after a trauma event of this kind. So it's very important for us as nurses to be able to relate ourselves to parents. And indeed, there is another major feature of communication, that is to say, our ability to listen to parents, not just to communicate with them, because listening is the basis of dialogue and not vice versa. So in the nurse to individual relationship, the fact itself of feeling that the nurse is listening to you reduces the distance between yourself and the nurse. So how can we actually improve listening? How can we define a good level of listening? Well, first of all, understanding content, and this is one part, but also the ability to identify with the experience of the other person, which is empathy. So listening is certainly an active intellectual procedure, but it's also an effective involvement. We listen with our ears, and then we process with our mind. So listening becomes a therapeutic type of listening, because nurses will have to resort to their abilities to perceive, their intellectual abilities, their interpreting abilities, and their empathic abilities. So perception should be developed through the observation of users, but at the same time nurses should develop their intellectual ability in order to understand at the best the content and to link, to relate the different data collected, to develop on this basis working hypothesis, and then to plan the care, to plan care based on these hypotheses and these links. So, as regards the training and education of nurses, it is quite clear that communication is an essential part of this activity. And as regards pediatric nurses, this is something which must be correlated to the age and psychological development of the child, and obviously to parents, to the extent to which this is necessary. In the case we have just shown, the support activity, the empathy with parents, actually yielded excellent results. So if we return to the model of complexity and we apply it to parents, we find that parents had a good health status, their ability to choose is nil as regards the treatment plan, but they have a high level of understanding, and this will enable nurses to establish a trust-based relationship. And this high level of understanding by parents will be extremely useful later on when they will be called upon to interact with the child. As regards autonomy, well, parents move from nil to the ability to care directly for the child as regards certain procedures and activities. However, within the framework of this nurse-to-parent relationship, it is nurses which enjoy the highest level of autonomy, and they have an exclusive role as regards education, and education provided by the nurse must be modulated depending on the level of understanding of the nurse's counterpart. Now, therapeutic education of patients is one of the most important developments in education to health, health education. So, a complete therapeutic approach means that the care provider's team and the patient should really establish a therapeutic alliance. In our specific case, since the child was very young, education was aimed at parents, let's say not at patients, but at adults, who at that time were highly involved from an emotional viewpoint, but also in terms of feeling responsible for the child, feeling that they had to care for the child and protect him. And actually, adults tend to learn better and more in informal situations, especially when they feel that they are comfortable and the situation is flexible. So it's very important for parents not to feel threatened. And in these cases, parents will invest a lot in understanding the benefits of learning and the disadvantages of not learning. So it's very important to establish an appropriate relationship with parents in order to obtain the appropriate information for them and to be able to convey to them our messages in order to get their full cooperation. So, in this specific case, we were able to help parents to recognize their feelings in respect of what had happened and to work out the feeling of responsibility and the guilt. We were able to convey information quite well to parents, and when the child had been weaned from the ventilator and was conscious, then parents did spend a lot of time with the child. Although it was an intensive care, actually it was a single room, so there were no problems having the parents spend time with the child. And so, patients were educated in depth by the nurses, and there was, as it were, a sort of passage of control and decision-making capabilities to a limited extent from nurses to parents. Indeed, the parents were involved in basic care activity, which helped to enhance their feeling that they were really playing the role of parents, promoted self-esteem, and facilitated communication with the child. So here we have splendid parents with a child. Okay. Now, after the first part, so a good relationship between nurses and parents, where there was also a certain degree of delegation from nurses to parents, so passing on information guarantees the continuity of care, and then the child was transferred to the orthopedic ward, and we started wondering what was going to happen in terms of abrupt detachment of the child from the environment in which he had been staying for so long and having to interact with new people. So this was one problem. A second problem was that of passing on the information regarding the pain control techniques we had resorted to. So eventually we decided to meet the orthopedic staff in order to explain to them how the peripheral catheter had to be managed. But this was not just a technical meeting. It was a meeting with our orthopedic colleagues which was aimed at making them understand all that was necessary. You know, the tastes of Daniele, the habits of Daniele, and what we wanted to do was to ensure the continuity of care. So, at the beginning, immediately after Daniele was moved to the orthopedic ward, there was still an anesthetist and a nurse of our service whenever he was medicated, whenever the dressing was changed. And we visited him for a number of days, more than once a day, to keep the connection. And actually, the result is very good, because Daniele now comes back to the hospital and visits us, and he visits our service as if he were visiting, I don't know, a kindergarten. He's very happy to be in that environment. So, to conclude, we may state that nurses have, first of all, an educational role to play, and as regards health, they put an educational diagnosis, that is to say, they identify the requirements of clients and the level of education the clients need. They define the objectives, that is to say, the possible, achievable aims. They define the educational contract. They establish the method to be used in order to achieve these objectives. They plan the procedures to be carried out, and they assess together with patients or parents the feasibility of the approach opted for, especially in view of the objectives. Allow me to close by stressing that pain is a subjective experience. It does not depend solely on the type of tissue involved. There are numerous factors which can influence the state of pain, and therefore they must all be involved in our assessment. We need a global assessment of factors which trigger pain. This is Daniele today. And as you can see, he's running in a garden. And we can say that this was a truly satisfactory experience, because we had excellent results with him. Thank you very much for your attention.